All views and opinions of the hosts and their guests on the following show are only their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KBOG or its owners.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Car Psychic Show. All right, today we're going to be talking about all things automotive. And I thought we'd start out with a little bit of automotive news. And I'm joined by my ever-popular host, co-host, Chip Casson, and
hey.
good to have you here, Chip.
Do you have my mic on? Yes, you do.
All right.
And let me just say that we do play music. If you have a request, the number is 541-516-0190. 541-516-0190. If you have a music request, just send your name and who you want to shout out to and the name of the song.
Yeah, good. All right, so I thought we'd start off with a little automotive news. Made all kinds of headlines over this week. Governor Gavin Newsom on Wednesday issued an executive order to require all new cars sold to be zero-emission vehicles by 2035. And he also threw his support behind a ban on the controversial use of hydraulic fracturing by oil companies.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. That can't be in the same law, can it?
Well, threw in his support. I mean, what, he made a statement? I don't know. Yeah,
he threw in the support for hydraulic fracturing?
Banning it.
Okay, yes. That sounds like California. I'm thinking he can't be supporting it. That's not a liberal position.
Exactly. Yeah, so basically the California Air Resources Board, or CARB, would implement a phase-out of new gas-powered cars and light trucks, and also require medium and heavy-duty trucks to be zero-emission by 2045. All right, so there's a little caveat there. California would be the first state in the nation to mandate 100% zero-emission vehicles, though 15 countries already have committed to phasing out gasoline-powered cars.
Right. I think California is just keeping pace mm-hmm. with a progressive agenda.
Yes.
Which means that do they really expect all vehicles to be electric in 15 years?
Right.
I'm not thinking that they do.
So the caveat is zero emission. So zero emission could be a nuclear-powered vehicle, for instance.
Oh, interesting.
Or a hydrogen-powered vehicle.
Is that even possible?
Yes.
Or French fry emission. Can you make vehicles out of French fry
now? They make diesels that they convert to run on vegetable oil. But that's not zero emission. So that would not work.
In Back to the Future, when he shows up at the end of the movie and he takes someone's trash and he just dumps it in the back of the car.
Right.
Would that ever be possible?
In a sense.
Because it would need to decay first, would it not?
Right, of course. But in a sense, that's what natural gas is. It's decayed matter, so to speak.
From like millions. How many billions of dead animals would that be?
Right, yeah.
Lots, right?
Yeah. It wouldn't be instantaneous.
So is oil, right?
Docks.
Oil
exactly.
is just billions of dinosaurs that have died. I mean, didn't they rain for like 100 million years?
Yeah, so it's ancient fuel.
This is what I don't get, right? If the deeper you dig, mm-hmm. the further back in time you go, right?
Okay.
So you start to dig down in the ground, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper, and you go further back in time.
Mm-hmm.
That means the Earth is getting bigger.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I'd imagine so.
Does that mean we're 100 feet bigger than we were 10,000 years ago?
Yeah.
Because you dig down 100 feet?
Yeah. Well, it's all that cosmic space dust peppering the surface.
That must be it. So Earth is getting bigger and heavier.
I imagine there's a calculation of how much weight does Earth gain
every day?
Yeah, every day, every year.
And is there any way that it loses weight?
Right.
Or does it just keep gaining weight over time?
Yeah, perpetually gains weight.
Does that mean we slow down around the sun?
Our rotation, our spin slows down? I don't know. Yeah, these are deep philosophical questions.
Yes, but possibly tangential to where we are as an automotive world.
Right. So on this zero emissions ban, it's a lofty goal, and you know, in 15 years, basically, Gavin Newsom will not be the governor.
No.
And maybe he'll be the president.
No, but let's just say this. There are industries, and mm-hmm. and we're going to touch upon this when we talk about Tesla. Mm-hmm. There are industries that all they want to do is veg mm-hmm. and make a profit.
Yeah.
Because they control the market.
Right.
Like Tesla and the dealers in states.
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes, you know, it might be in the nation's interest to kick them a little bit. And
yeah.
say, you need to get out of your vegetative state and yeah. actually start to think about the future.
Yeah, be innovative. Yeah.
So, you know, Gavin Newsom, I mean, I'm much more supportive of stuff like this than you are, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Gavin Newsom is just kicking the industry a little bit and saying, you need yeah. to start pulling away from gas
yeah.
and getting more serious about electric. And right. I know that they're trying to be serious now, right?
Sure. They being the manufacturers?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all starting to nod their heads towards electric vehicles.
Right. Just about every manufacturer has one.
Yes, but they're not thinking that gas is going to go away yeah. anytime soon.
It seems like a lot of the manufacturers just make these electric vehicles to meet the mandates that are set forth, that something like 1% of your vehicles sold in California must be electric.
Right. And you think that California is thinking, because they're not saying that they're not going to let gas vehicles on the road.
Right.
They're just saying that in California, you can't manufacture cars.
You can't buy a new one.
You can't buy a new one. Yeah. So, you know, does this mean that people will be mm-hmm. going to Nevada to buy a car?
Right. Yeah.
You know, or to Mexico or to Oregon to buy a car?
Right. When that time comes, you know, this 15 years seems like a long ways off.
It's not, though.
A lot could happen between now and then with the economy.
Right.
With
but they fight everything. I was just reading, because you gave me a year, and I won't say why, but you gave me the year of 1962, right?
Uh-huh.
And 1962 is when they mandated seatbelts.
Yeah. Boy.
You know, and they fought it.
Yeah.
You know, they fight everything.
It's going to make our cars so expensive. We can't afford it.
No, we can't do it. You know, my hair's on fire.
Yeah.
You know, but they do.
Yeah.
When they mandate, you know, seatbelts, airbags, every time they'll go, no, we can't do it. No way we can do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know?
But, you know, I mean, but in retrospect, they're all good moves.
Yeah.
Or we perceive them as such because they're such a part of our reality now that no one even thinks twice about putting a seatbelt on now, do they?
No. No, not really. Yeah, but when you think about, you know, the government, quote-unquote, forcing change, there's a lot of resistance. There's a lot of resistance. From
and what state do we live in? What county do we live in? I guess I should say county, because Oregon's a blue state, right?
Sure.
So the county we live in...
Is red
county. So anything the government... You just say government, and people, like, run screaming.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, you know, government has its place, and what I like to see is the innovation from manufacturers to bring the costs down on certain things like electric cars, for instance.
Right.
And at some point, the buying public sees the benefit, and they see that, hey, this really is an advantage for me to do this.
Yes.
Instead of it being forced upon them as a only alternative, I think that's where the bridge can be crossed, so to speak.
Right. But a lot of times, I mean, again, from a liberal perspective, the government mm-hmm. has to, the public has to be dragged kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to see it. I mean, look at the whole gay rights agenda thing. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, public fights. Well, yeah, in the end, it's seen as a civil mm-hmm. advancement.
Yeah.
You know, but people are going to fight it until it happens.
Yeah.
We have a request.
Oh, good.
Eric?
All right. We'll take it into consideration.
Okay. It when you get to it,
mm-hmm.
the request is War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Oh, yeah.
This is from LaToya. Shout out to Emily.
All right. Right on.
All right.
We'll get to it in a little bit here. We're just talking car stuff. So the one thing it will do is... as time approaches for this mandate, quote-unquote, that this will not ban the sale of gasoline-powered cars on the used car market.
No.
So there'll be lots of that going on.
But let's just say that California is traditionally a little further ahead than the rest of the country in stuff like this.
Well, they always have been in their emissions regulations. And
right, because there's such a huge market. I mean, California and Texas pretty much drive a lot of the market one way or the other. In fact, oppositionally, they drive the market because Texas will look at what California does and goes, we're going to do the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
California does this, we're going to do the opposite.
Yep. Yep. All right. And you were we touched a little bit on manufacturing in California. And as far as I know, as of today, none of the big three manufacture automobiles in California anymore. There's, I think the only manufacturing you have is Tesla.
In fact, Tesla is moving to Texas.
Right.
You know, I think it took Elon Musk a little bit to realize that he's not a progressive.
Yeah.
He's not. You know, with the whole COVID thing.
Yeah.
I think that's what
that was the last straw.
Is leading to the divorce between. Because I used to live right by the Tesla plant.
Right.
Down in the South Bay.
Yeah.
And he's like, he wanted to open up, and California kept saying no, 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 no. And finally he had it, and he's moved to Texas.
So I toured that plant in 1976 when it was General Motors.
Oh, wow.
And so I went there and toured the assembly line, and I remember it was a nighttime tour. It was kind of different. We showed up there after work one day with the work crew from our shop.
Was the work, isn't it a factory, which means it's 24/7?
Yeah,
or was everything shut down?
It was a full-on 24/7 factory back then. And they were building the Chevy Malibu 1975 or 76 model, and also the Chevy El Camino of that model year. But that was the smaller version, so to speak.
I destroyed an El Camino in my life.
Nice.
I totaled one, yeah.
Oh, not good. I wonder if it was a good one. I wonder what year it was.
It's not a good one now. After I had my hands on it.
It's scrapped.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was interesting to see the manufacturing process. Back in those days, that was a body-on-frame design where the frame with the engine would roll down part of the assembly line, then overhead came the body. And
they would drop it
down?
They'd
drop it down, and they'd make the body to the frame. That's how old I am.
Do they not do that anymore?
Most cars are what are called unibody, or unitized construction, with not really a separate frame or not a separate body-on-frame design.
But how would it go down the assembly line?
Well,
I don't even understand that.
Well, so now when they go down the assembly line, it's a welded steel structure that holds the doors and the trunk, so to speak.
Right.
That then a subframe generally bolts up underneath the car towards the front of the car, and that subframe would house the engine and transmission on a front-wheel drive car. And that's pretty common today.
Do you think if you and I don't know where the closest automobile plant is. Where, from right here in Bandon, where is the closest automotive
production?
Yes.
It'd be Tesla, probably.
In Texas or the one in
California?
In California still? Do you think if we ask them for a tour, they go, Wednesday, Fridays, and Saturdays, 1 o'clock?
You could go on their website, I'm sure.
Do you think that they have tours?
I think they do, especially for buyers of their vehicles. I know they get some perks.
Do you think would they charge for a tour? Would they go get $20?
Generally not.
Really? Generally so I would be able to go there and just go on a tour for free?
Generally speaking. I mean, the tour we did with GM was free. I remember to help myself to some cigarette lighters.
Wow.
On the assembly line, they'd stick the cigarette lighter in the socket, and I
lived there for 20.
Myself.
I lived there for 20 years, and I never thought about. I rode my bike past there all the time.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Maybe there was a free tour I could go on.
Yeah, yeah. So I went later on, in the probably the late 80s, and it was the NUMMI plant. So it was a General Motors Toyota joint venture. So they were building the Chevy Nova. The modern, which was basically a Toyota Corolla, and they were also building the Toyota Tacoma pickup truck in the same plant. And so that was pretty interesting to see how the plant had changed and modernized.
Yeah.
And then soon after that, the plant shut down. It sat idle for decades, it seemed like, until old Elon came along and said, hey, wow, there's a great big factory here. I can
and he probably got a deal.
He got a sweet deal. Yeah. So there you are, manufacturing. You were talking a little bit about Studebaker.
Yes. Yeah. So Studebaker, the Studebaker family came over in the 1700s or something, and you know, old German, and they made harnesses for horses. Yeah. And then they slowly expanded, and I guess their skill set was metallurgy, right? So they could make really strong metal harnesses.
Yeah.
And they slowly expanded over the decades into wagons.
Right.
And then by the Civil War, they were making such high-quality wagons that the Union Army sort of made them all rich.
Right, I bet.
From making these wagons. And then by 1900, I guess the first car manufacturer was like 1895. Was it something with a D?
Dayton? No,
maybe some. That was the first one, but there ended up being 3,000 car manufacturers,
right?
And Studebaker was one of them. And their first thinking that what was going to take off was electric vehicles. So their first cars were electric in 1902. Their first car was electric.
Uh huh.
And you have to wonder what the construction of it was compared to today.
Right.
You know, I mean, wouldn't it be interesting to see like a 1902 electric car?
Yeah, those batteries must have been something
huge
else.
Pretty
big, and lead acid batteries, I'm sure.
And maybe it only had a range of 10 miles or something, but back in those days, who cared? I mean, and
they called up Thomas Edison, we need to charge this thing.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And like, so you just want, I wonder if there's an existing 1902 Studebaker somewhere.
I'm sure some museum has one, or Jay Leno probably has one.
But that didn't last, because by 1905 they were making gas-powered cars.
Yeah.
I guess the whole industry was moving that way.
Yeah.
And you touched upon this, that when you look at the way the world was constructed back then.
Yeah, the rural America, for instance.
Who had power?
Yeah.
To plug in their car.
Right. So many farms were just powerless, quote unquote.
And
yeah.
So maybe the initial markets for cars were like the initial markets for early computers. Mm-hmm. They were just hobbyists.
Specialists. Or urban cities.
People who had a lot of money.
Yeah.
So maybe they figured electric, you know, they're in the city, they're wealthy, they have power.
My butler will charge my car for me.
Well, yes, exactly. And then I'll look good because we'll drive to the party.
What do they call those? They had like stable boys, right? The stable boys who took care of the carriage and the horses eventually became also the mechanics.
Yes,
as time went on.
Well, this touches upon house construction, because cars started taking off in the early 20th century, right? And now when you walk through a neighborhood, everybody's house has a garage in front.
Yeah.
Because cars have become part of our lives.
An attached garage is a popular option. Yeah.
So the almost universal construction of a house now is it's got a front door, a couple windows, and a garage.
Attached garage.
So you're thinking, but before cars, what did houses look like?
Yeah.
You know, did they, because they didn't have a stable next to them, because the stables would be separate.
Right. They usually had a stable house or a stable barn or something.
A carriage house, right?
A carriage house, that's
the word. Because you wouldn't want the horses anywhere near your house.
Right. They had a carriage house.
They would have a carriage house. So
so
houses must have looked different back in those days.
Of course.
They would just be a front door.
Yeah.
With some rooms, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right. All right, we're going to play that request for War Pigs.
War Pigs, Black Sabbath from Emily or Latoria, one of those, whatever it was.
Here we go. Thank you.
masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling. Begging mercies for the sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Thank you.
All right, we're back.
That was a Prince of Darkness, Ozzy Osbourne.
Black Sabbath. War Pigs, Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
As a request by a listener, we appreciate your request.
Yes, thank you, Latoya, I think her name is.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, okay, because we talked about Studebaker,
yeah,
I had to read about Packard.
Packard.
You know, Packard started in like 1895. These two Packard brothers got an investor out of Detroit, mm-hmm. which was starting to become big, and they started to build luxury cars, and they stayed luxury pretty much for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
Pretty much the whole way that we're early on in the 1900s, most cars were between $500 and $1,000, and the Packards were $2,500.
Wow, luxury.
And they said to build, the process to build a Packard car required 80 different types of tradesmen.
Yeah.
To build a car.
Right. Wow, good stuff.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I mean, like what happens to a lot of times, I mean, young companies come up and they can do things faster, quicker, better, yeah. which is the American way, right?
Yeah.
And so then the old quality guys get crushed.
Yeah, so Packard got consumed by Studebaker.
Right. And the two of them tried with the rise of Ford and Chrysler,
uh-huh.
the two of them clung to each other because they eventually merged, right?
Right.
And the two of them clung to each other because uh-huh. these young guys were crushing them.
Yeah.
And that didn't last 5 years, and they died.
Right. Right, yeah. But Studebaker lived on up until the early 60s, I believe.
They did, yeah.
And they produced a lot of beautiful cars, you know, the Golden Hawk, the Lark.
And you said you worked on a Studebaker or two.
Or two, yeah, in my
How
day.
How about Packards? Did you ever work on a Packard?
I don't think so. I can certainly picture them, but no, they were pretty rare. A Packard car from the 50s
Wouldn't you
was
like
a pretty rare car.
Okay, since you've been involved in the industry for so long,
uh-huh.
have you ever been to museums where you could look at like mm-hmm. a 1940s engine,
oh, yeah.
a 1930s engine, a 1920s oh, yeah. engine,
sure.
and just see how they change over the years?
Oh, yeah.
Is it mostly just in materials, like the, uh-huh. the weight of the engine?
Yeah, the sizes, you know, the different innovations that came along that changed the industry were, you know, there were different milestones and you know, that you had, I really didn't follow the Model A's or Model T's from Ford too much. I don't know a lot about them. I have worked on a Model T, but...
Only that he had the most successful car in the world
right.
when he started the Model T. It yeah. quickly became the most successful car in the world.
I take that back. I worked on a Model A. 1927 is Model A.
You worked on that Model A? You didn't work on a Model A. You saw one.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the Model A yeah. before the Model T?
After.
After? T. No, that doesn't make sense to
Yeah,
you.
Exactly.
It can't.
No, it is.
No, because you have to... A, B, C, D...
Not Ford. Model T was the first Ford that we all know from
okay,
the
but
old
why
did,
okay, is there, if I went to Wikipedia, would they explain why would he call it the Model T if uh-huh. A is the first letter of the alphabet?
Right, good question. That's your Ford history for you, you know. And I'm not a big Ford boy, so
I'm
don't
sure
know.
Somebody must have that on the internet somewhere.
But anyhow, as the technologies and engines went along through the decades, certain milestones were kind of met, and they went from the flathead engine to the overhead valve engine in mass production for American cars.
So that means something to people who know cars.
Yeah,
the difference between flathead and overhead valve yeah. means something.
Yes, it means the engine breathes better, revs higher.
Okay, but the piston as my
still piston engine. Yeah,
the extent of my skill sets. Uh-huh. In engines, is a piston goes up and down.
Right.
Boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Right. And so in cars today, mm-hmm. is it true that the piston still goes up and down?
Yes.
Okay. So is that an overhead valve engine?
Every modern car today is overhead valve.
And
yes.
the spark plug is on top of
yes.
that?
Right.
Is on top of it?
Yeah.
So it, what's a flathead then?
A flathead means that the valves are in the engine block right alongside the pistons.
I'm already lost.
Yeah, so that's really strange, and it was a very unusual way, I thought, because they're just foreign to me. Look at a flathead engine, go, wow, those things worked? Yeah, they worked.
But
they worked really good.
Yes, but when you think about the evolution of of technological change, you have an early idea and it works, so you stick with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's the best one. It's the one that works, right?
Right.
Like when we built projects in my day, our mantra was make it work, then make it better. Right. But your first job is to make it work. And it might be a stupid design, but it works. And everyone stands back and goes, okay, it works. Let's just release it.
Well, that's what happened with cars. They got better and they got more efficient. And it's all about gaining that efficiency.
Right. And over the course of the 60 years, I would imagine that every now and then someone looks at something, some component of the car, and a light bulb goes off. It's like, well, why don't we just do this different?
And they're kind of, we always say this, you know, that they're kind of reaching the pinnacle of efficiency of the internal combustion engine.
Right.
It can only be so efficient. You can't make it any more efficient,
that's
so to speak.
That's what you say.
Right.
That's what you say.
That they are inherently the conversion of the fuel versus the power that comes out. You lose something like well over 50% of the of lost energy, so to speak, with a gasoline engine.
Right.
Unlike an electric motor, it's however much juice you put in is,
that's
so
this
how
is
much
what
you
I
get
think
out.
It's like when the FCC came out of World War II, they had these really, they had this really narrow bandwidth, and Wi-Fi technology was just starting. And they say, okay, we'll just take this really narrow bandwidth and we'll give it to Wi-Fi, not expecting anything
to blow up. Right.
Anything blow up because it was such a narrow band that they were releasing to Wi-Fi. Well, people are really clever. They're really, really clever. And Wi-Fi has taken over the world.
Right.
Even with this narrow band.
So you can even have Wi-Fi in your car now today.
Yeah. So I think that you can never discount
the
ingeniousness of people.
No, right. That's very true. Yeah, and we are going to change the subject here. So,
What else you want to talk about? Because I have other things I can talk about.
You had another automotive question for me, I thought.
An automotive question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was going to ask you, I don't know what I was on about, but I was going to ask you about what you thought about when the industry started up. I'm curious that now most of us buy cars through dealerships.
I know where you're going.
So Ford doesn't sell cars direct.
Right.
They sell through dealers. So you're always buying through this middleman.
Yes.
And you would think, well, maybe that started up because all Ford wanted to do was make cars.
Right.
And you had all these guys that, hey, I'll sell it for you. I'll sell it for you. I'll maintain it for you.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that made sense. Ford's like, okay, well, I don't really want to sell it. I want to make it.
Yeah, I don't know that part of history on Ford and the early car manufacturers of how their dealer network got started.
Right, because the big three, by the time of World War II, that was the model. All big, every car in America was sold through a dealership, which means you had this massive financial layer in the process of selling cars between the manufacturer and the customer, right? And in other fields, like with phones now, you can go directly to an Apple store and buy an Apple phone.
Right.
The manufacturer sells you the product.
Right.
Right? It's an intimate relationship between you and Apple or you and Google. I mean, you can there's a lot of processes that a lot of things you can buy now direct from the manufacturer.
Right. So this brings up an article that you shared with me earlier in the week.
About Tesla.
No, it was Rivian. And Tesla.
Yes, exactly.
Rivian.
Well, this is what happened, was Tesla wants to sell direct.
Yeah.
And this has been a battle that they've been fighting at every state level, in every state for the last 10 years, that they want to sell direct. And, of course, the dealers in every state.
They have associations.
They have massive associations.
Unions.
With massive lobbyists.
Unions.
With unions, and they do not want Tesla to selling direct.
Right. So I guess that means that Tesla has to open a quote-unquote dealership.
Yes. So they're fighting 50 different legal battles right now. And when you look it up, some states allow it. Some states don't allow it.
Right.
Like Texas. Tesla's moving to Texas.
But
they're not allowed to sell cars in Texas, right? So they can have showrooms in Texas.
Uh-huh.
but they can't sell a car in Texas, nor can they talk about pricing. What they can do is they can show a car.
Doesn't this seem the whole concept of not being able to do that seems so anti-American,
because
right?
Because of the dealerships, exactly.
Right. It seems like this is goes against everything we're taught.
Right. It sort of points to the death of dealerships, that they're clinging tooth and claw to this old model.
And they got lawyers, and they
And the original purpose was so that a Ford dealer didn't have to compete with Ford as a manufacturer, right? So the original purpose of it was that so that they wouldn't have to deal with their manufacturer. Mm-hmm. But Tesla has no dealers that they have to compete against. So the laws like sort of turned on its head.
So I've been to California before, and when I was
have
there,
you
yes, and when I was there. Down in the beautiful town of Walnut Creek. Yeah, Walnut Creek. Uh-huh. They have a really posh downtown shopping district.
Right. Walnut Creek.
Neiman Marcus and all that. And there, right there on the main street between the Neiman Marcus and the whatever store, the Gucci handbag store, I guess.
Is a Tesla showroom.
There's a Tesla showroom.
Yep. Santana Row down in Santa Clara has the same thing.
You walk
Santana
in there.
Row is all ritzy stores, and right in the middle there is a Tesla showroom.
In California, you look at it, you can option it out right there, and I'm sure schedule a test drive. But then you can literally go to the factory and pick it up when it's done.
Yes. So in Michigan also, so some of the states, you can't buy the car in the same state as the showroom.
So you have to take an out-of-state delivery?
You have to take an out-of-state delivery. So Tesla has managed to work the process so that once they deliver the car, because originally all they were allowed to do was deliver the car, and then the customer had to do all the paperwork, the licensing, all this other kind of stuff once the car was delivered. But now Tesla's got to a point where they're allowed to do all the paperwork as well. So once it shows up at the customer's door, everything's done and ready. There's a license plate. There's everything else. Now, what you brought up in Michigan, there's an electric car manufacturer
called
in Michigan.
Ravian is the name.
Ravian. And they make trucks. And they haven't put a truck into production yet. It's going to be next year, right?
Prototypes are out there.
Prototypes are out there.
The car shows.
They're about
stuff.
To go into production for next year.
Yeah.
And now Michigan, because Tesla has fought so hard, and Elon Musk has so much money, and Michigan's such a huge market that they've carved out this little piece of law that allows Tesla
to do it, get away with it,
to sell cars now.
But now, what are they saying to Ravian?
Right, but not Ravian. And Ravian's like, dude, we're a Michigan manufacturer.
Yeah, right, and they're building the car in, I read it, in Normal, Illinois is where they're going to be building the truck. And that's the old, that was a Mitsubishi factory.
Oh, it was really?
Yeah.
It's funny how.
That was part of Chrysler's domain at one time.
Right.
Chrysler's was partner with Mitsubishi.
So it's almost like, why would Michigan allow Tesla, which is not a Michigan company, to do it, and not allow Ravian to do it, which is a Michigan company?
Right. Yeah.
Right. So the,
things
are gonna
dealers, change.
So the dealers are like twisting themselves in knots with legalities, trying to keep their claws on the market.
It's like seems like it just comes down to semantics or whatever. Like, what do you call it? You call this a dealer network? Do you call it a whatever?
Yes,
you know?
and I think that's eventually the way laws eventually change.
Yeah,
is they're going to go to the dealers. Well, we're not calling it a dealer. We're allowing Ravian to do it, and they're going to be and they'll give it some other name.
Right,
and the dealers will go,
okay, you can do it. Because when I worked down there in California, there was a Tesla service center near the industrial complex where I was. And it was just a nondescript building, really, with a small Tesla red and white sign. But there's always Teslas outside. And that was their service center for warranty work and whatever. Huh. And the Teslas were going in and out of there. That place is just crawling with Teslas.
Right. So the big question, I think, for Texas is that, you know, when you have a Tesla plant in California and you're charging $60,000 for a car, you're surrounded by techies who have $60,000 for a car.
Yeah.
You know, techie people now, you know, you can get salaries at Google and Apple start at $150,000 a year.
I don't think they're not going to sell any less cars just because they're moving to Texas.
That's, I know, but you know, it makes it convenient that your customer base is right there.
Well, I don't think that'll go away. I think that Tesla factory
will stay,
or some form of it.
Right,
it's possible they'll use it to manufacture certain components that are then shipped to California. I mean, to Texas, maybe, to be built. I bet you that might be in
right,
the plan.
Right. So, but the problematic thing, I mean, there's a logistic problem. It's like if you build 10,000 cars in Texas, do you have any kind of customer base in Texas?
Mm-hmm. No, this is the beauty of shipping.
Well, for me, the beauty being a progressive, the beauty of Texas right now is.
Austin.
Austin, okay. of course, which is the shining light of sanity in Texas.
Right.
No, but back when the .com crash happened in 2008, California is a really expensive place to live. So the .com crash happens, and Texas is cheap.
Yeah,
so
a lot of people went then, huh?
So a lot of tech companies moved to Texas, and of course, it brought in techies.
Yeah.
So Texas back in those days was always so proud of itself that California's going down the pits.
Right.
But we're successful. We're economically successful.
Look out! Here we come.
So back in 2008, they were crowing so much about how successful they were economically compared to California. Of course, now 10 years later, you know, you have all these techies living in Texas, and Texas is turning purple. And now they don't know what to do about it.
Well, this is delving into politics here.
It is, but it's like, well, you know, you wanted to bring in,
all right,
commerce.
Let's reel it back and talk about the Tesla move to Texas. What little I know of it in detail is that they want to take basically the all their manufacturing that they do in California and do it in Texas. They got a sweet tax break from the governor or wherever they got the proposal to build it. They got some big incentives to do it, and California couldn't match that. So I think that made a financial move, so to speak, for them.
Sure.
And factoring in
money's
shipping.
Money.
If you go up and down the I-5 corridor today and just sat there, I bet you'd see a dozen trucks going north full of Teslas.
Right.
Riding north, going up to Portland, going up to Seattle.
So you think from a Tesla point of view, and this is probably what Texas sold it to them as, you know, you could even manufacture and still ship 1,000 miles and still make more money.
Of course.
You know, throw them on a train, and you'll still make more money.
Musk is no idiot. He's going for the
The
money, the bottom dollar.
Yes. Yes. Psychological studies say that 40% of CEOs are sociopaths. All they think about is money first.
And the other Tesla thing that is in operation now is the Gigafactory in Reno, where they build their batteries.
Oh.
So just outside of Reno, this is one of the largest man-made structures, the Gigafactory.
Oh, really?
With a name like that.
Is that what
impressive.
It's called, the Giga Factory?
Giga, yeah, Giga.
Is that, did they name it back in the days when gigabyte was a really big thing?
I think they maybe were, since it's a battery factory, it's gigawatt.
Okay. Right, because now gigabytes are like deal. You know, a gigabyte is not really that big a thing anymore.
So they got that going up there, and that created a mini boom up there in the Reno area with, I'm sure, drove people there. So you know what, I can move to the Nevada desert, I can get a job at the Gigafactory, and I can afford to live there, I can afford to buy a house there.
Wow, you know? I mean, that's, yes, and the big challenge, I think, for manufacturers and technology companies especially have this problem, is the best techies in the world are 16 years old. The 16 and 17 and 18 years old, they're the smartest, fastest people.
Yeah.
And can you convince them to move to Nevada instead of San Francisco? You know,
I think they just have to look around today and say, hey, I can't afford to stay here.
Well, yeah, but that's the kind of thing when you're 30 years old and you want to buy a house, right?
Yeah.
When you're 30, you want to buy a house, but when you're young, you don't need to buy a house. You just want to have fun.
Okay.
And how do you convince them to live in Nevada instead of San Francisco?
Well, that's a hard sell, as we all know.
Right. Okay, so we have another request.
Oh, cool.
Came in
Yay.
From John.
John, all right. John.
AC/DC, Thunder?
Thunderstruck?
Thunder. Yeah, probably. Thunderstruck, yeah. I don't think he knew what he was really talking about. Maybe he was...
All right, here's a little AC/DC, and we'll be back with you.
All right.
You're listening to KBOG 97.9 FM, Band in Oregon.
Thunder, 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 th
All right.
Okay. Mr. Eric.
Yeah.
I have a listener question here.
Okay.
What do you think of velomobiles? I found one with a solar paneled roof with a small electric motor.
Oh.
What is a velomobile anyway?
Well, velo is a word that I don't know the definition
it's
of.
It's a word? Really? Is it? No. I think velo...
It sounds Greek almost.
Yes, it is. But but its connotations are usually with bicycle.
Uh-huh.
So a velomobile is sort of like the
something
bicycle.
Something with wheels?
Yes. It's sort of like a bicycle that's surrounded by...
By a body.
By a body. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right. So... So those always fascinated me, how they can make them so light and thin-skinned, and that driver would have to shoehorn himself in there.
Right.
And he'd have to be an athlete.
But you wonder about functional use. I mean, yes, you know, it's used for, what, speed records?
Right.
For bicyclists? Mm-hmm. But it's like, is there a functional use for these things?
Well, if you've met some unusual bicycles, I'm sure, on the road in your travels, bicycles.
I have.
The three-wheeled guys, you know.
The three-wheeled guys.
Some of them have bodies on them and stuff.
I've met multiple people going across the country with dogs.
Uh-huh.
So they would be pulling a little platform on the back of their bike.
Oh, yeah. The little
and the dog would just be on the back platform.
Wagon.
And then when he had to do his business or he wanted to run, he would just jump off.
How cool.
And then jump back on when he wanted to.
Yeah. But those speed record bikes, going back to those, there's some automotive technology bleeds over. And they trade technologies even in that, from carbon fiber, which is a huge thing today.
Right.
Carbon fiber in your automobile is becoming more common, at least in exotic cars for sure.
Well, but certainly for bicycles. I mean, carbon fiber is everywhere now on high-end bikes.
Lightweight, strong. Of course, in the new Corvettes, I can't name the cars that use some form of carbon fiber in a body structure and or in a suspension component. Uh-huh. Those are popular places to use them. So, those speed record bikes, it's incredible the speeds they can get just with human power.
Do you think they do those races in the desert like they do with cars?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, in fact, there's a place in Nevada where they do the bicycle thing.
Right. So, in the South Bay, one of my popular rides that I would do is I would ride from the Santa Clara Fairgrounds down to Gilroy, which is about a 20-mile ride. But you can do it through, because it runs along a river. So, it's mostly river trail, almost the whole way, the whole 20 miles. But on the way there, you pass a moss-infected velo dome.
Oh, wow, cool. So velodrome.
Yeah, velodrome is deep in the woods there.
Was it an old wood board track, I wonder? Or
I don't know, but I feel bad for not knowing because I would just ride my bike by and it said velodrome.
Right.
And you realize that this was a thing.
It's velodrome, I think, for bicycles.
So this was a thing at one time that people would, I mean, bicycle racing was big.
We race our remote control cars on those. Giant oval track. It's a perfect oval track.
Are they like
track.
Slanted?
Yeah. It's a high-banked oval for RC cars.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
In my stable of bicycles that I have, I have way too many bicycles, I do have a single-speed bike that has no brake. It's just you just pedal forward, and then you
no brake drum.
It has no free wheel, so... Uh-huh. To slow it down, you just have to slow your feet down.
Right. Yeah, yeah. For going at low speeds, that's great. But if you got to stop in a panic from a high speed, it's not so great.
You can't do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap up the show. You guys have been
listening to the Car Psychic. Okay, one of the things I want to talk about, which we don't have to do now, but was I was reading a lot about the difference between subscription cars and lease cars.
Oh.
You know?
Okay. Another category.
Yes, and I thought that was really interesting, and we could talk about it offline and then maybe talk about it.
That's a good topic. Just off the top of my head, sounds like it's the difference between a maintenance package or no maintenance package.
That's exactly it. You know, and in some countries, subscription cars are taking off.
Yeah.
Because you know what? You just... get the car.
Yeah.
We take care of everything.
You just
for
have
you.
To put gas in it.
All you have to do is put whatever. Gas in it.
Yeah.
And then when you want to turn it in, turn it in.
Uh-huh.
And you get another one.
Yeah. It's like renting a car, basically. With
right.
No
it's like
maintenance.
It hurts, right?
Yeah.
But it's like on like a longer term
yeah.
scenario.
I'm sure it makes sense for a lot of people in certain situations. If it's I was, advantageous.
If I was wealthy and I had money,
well,
I mean, it seems like the way to go. It's like I just want you
so
to take
many
care
people
of everything.
Write these leases off as a business expense.
Right.
So many business owners, even in this small town of Bandon, I bet, are able to take care of things or take advantage of things like that if their tax structure's right, so forth. They're able to write off that expense as a business expense.
Right.
This is my company car, and legitimately
means,
so. I'm
which
not saying
means then it doesn't really cost them anything at all.
Right.
Because the company's paying for
it. If you do it right, it's basically a tax write-off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it should be that way for business owners. It would be unfair if our local business owner wasn't able to do that versus some guy who makes, you know,
yeah.
$5 million a year.
Right.
Being able to take advantage of it.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. You've been listening to The Car Psychic.
All right.
We appreciate you listening, and those requests were great. Thank you all, and tell later.
All right. See you next time.
Stick around. 5:30, we're going to be back with the Bandon Traffic Report. And today's show...
Great show.
...is going to be One-Hit Wonders. It is One-Hit Wonder Day across the nation.
It's also Comic Book Day.
All right. So stick around. 5:30. We'll see you guys back in a while.
I'll find some that music. Black Gold, Texas Tea. Well, the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. The kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. Said, California's the place you ought to be. So they loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly Hills, that is, swimming pools, movie stars. The Beverly Hillbillies. Time to say goodbye to Jed and all his kin. They would like to thank you folks for kindly dropping in. You're all invited back next week to this locality to have a heaping helping of their hospitality. Hillbilly, that is. Set a spell. Take your shoes off. Y'all come back now. Here.
This has been a Filmwise presentation.